10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackanddrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support also comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's morning show, we are going to be taking a look at Fox News, and in particular, at Fox News through the lens of someone who has been on Fox News quite a lot. In fact, he hosted and guest hosted literally hundreds, perhaps thousands of different segments on Fox News over the course of many, many years. So someone from the inside, now the outside, and showing the world just how Fox News operates and the kind of priorities which are at play on that network. My guest is Tobin Smith. And anybody who has watched Fox News and Fox Business Network surely knows both his face and his name. He has just come out with a book called Foxocracy, Inside the Network's Playbook of Tribal Warfare. It is the contention of Tobin Smith, who for 14 years was a regular contributor to Fox News, that Fox News has done grievous harm and in maybe some ways irreparable harm to the American public and to those viewers who he believes are all but addicted to Fox News. And he believes that a lot of damage has been done to our country, to our democracy, and he spells out his concerns in this hard-hitting book, which is also, in a sense, a behind-the-scenes look at how programs are put together at Fox, and in particular, how certain exchanges that are presented as though they are debates are, in fact, carefully orchestrated to favor one side over the other in a way that Tobin Smith, for one, believes to be deeply deceitful and ultimately really, really harmful. The book is published by Diversion Books. Again, it's called Foxocracy, Inside the Network's Playbook of Tribal Warfare. Tobin Smith, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning.
Really glad that we can have this conversation. Let's start by having you really spell out maybe in clearer fashion than I just did, exactly what your connection was with Fox News. For how many times, for how lengthy a time, and in what various capacities?
Yeah, well, I in the television business, the term is contributor, and I won't bore the whole story, but there was a show that they had to cancel because of problems in 2000. I had a book out that was a bestseller, which means you get to go on all the talk shows, you know, one time. And I was doing Fox. Neil Cavuto, my dear friend, was interviewing me, and there's a woman named Brenda Butner who was going to take over the show that had been canceled. Brenda and I were like, you know, the younger sister and the older brother. We fought like dogs on television, which made for great TV. They hired me for this new show called The Bulls and Bears. My business is I'm an investment analyst, a macroeconomist, not a TV entertainer. And when we first started it, you know, that was basically what we did. That was, you know, mid-2000. We had, sort of gone on. And then 2001 happened. And Fox, remember, at this time, Fox had no ratings. I mean, literally 50,000 viewers, you know, and most of them were asleep drooling on their Lazy Boy. Then we got into 2000, you know, the 9/11 ratings went up, and okay, blah blah blah. But we were never really tribalized, and I like to use the term tribalized to mean that and we use the word tribalism a lot these days in the United States, but remember that tribalism, tribalized, means that you're a person who has come to the conclusion that your self-identity, politically or culturally, but in this case politically, is so important to you, and it's such a part of your self-identity that you've now flipped into tribal mode. And tribal mode means that my tribal enemy is not just someone I agree to disagree with. They're my existential enemy. They're a threat to my family, or a threat to my way of life. And so I'm going to be a person that loves to hate. And as we started going into 2008, and then after the 2008 election, all of a sudden everything flipped at Fox News, from not just the primetime shows, because my shows were on Saturday morning, and then I would guest host shows for Fox Business and occasionally for Fox News. I would be on O'Reilly, you know, Hannity, et cetera, for various things. But it was when Barack Obama was elected that Roger Ailes really had the chance to do what he wanted to do, which was essentially do this tribal hate propaganda, because he knew that once you assume this identity as a proud, you know, conservative, or today as a proud deplorable, your switches gears. It goes into tribal mode. And now when you see the enemy, you get a self-esteem rush when you hate the other enemy, because it's a self-congratulatory act, right? When we say, and remember, if you watched any of Fox News, they always say the stupid liberals or the stupid libtards or the, how stupid can they be? Well, when the host says that, the audience, the right-wing person who self-identifies as a proud, you know, whatever, deplorable conservative, they their persona at the subconscious level is saying, hey, how smart am I? And it's a self-esteem rush. And so just like, you know, if you watched Hoarders and you watched that show because you say, well, God, compared to that person, poor person who's hoarding stuff, I feel great about myself. This is the same dynamic. And when you had an enemy, what we lacked at Fox was an enemy. And when Barack Obama was elected, finally Roger had the enemy he wanted. And so then we flipped into this full tribal hate propaganda mode. And it was everything. Even our, you know, even our market show, even our economic show was, give me five reasons why our audience should hate Barack Obama and Obamanism and Obamacare and so on and so forth. And the ratings skyrocketed. So what happened? We tapped into the base tribal instinct that we all have. Human nature has not changed a bit in the, you know, the million years we've sort of been up from the goo. And we just suppressed it. And what we did is got into the tribal activation media program and tribal hatred activation, and the ratings soared. Why? Because there's a whole bunch of people out there who were waiting for somebody like Fox News, because that was always the joke, right? We called it Fox News, but yet all the ratings came from the tribal hate media. And that's when I realized, you know, later on all we do is manipulate people's worst instincts. And it's so easy to do when somebody's flipped over into this tribal mode and the ratings skyrocketed. And, you know, we started making $1 billion, $2 billion a year in profit off of hate. And what we didn't understand was this thing called social media was going to come in. And all of a sudden, the 3 million person audience in cable balloon to what the data says today is about 80 million people on a monthly basis interact with Fox's tribal hate media content via Facebook, via Twitter, via YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. And now we have this sort of epidemic of tribalism in the country, and people can't figure out why.
And to you, it's not a mystery at all. I wanted to make sure that our listeners understood before we dig into some of the specifics in terms of your relationship with Fox News, that when you came aboard, Fox News was not what it is now. And so at some point, you began to realize what this network had become, and it was obviously at odds with some of your own values, not even so much in terms of you're liberal or you're conservative, but just the way they were doing this obviously began to bother you at some point. How long were you at Fox with these, in a sense, kind of conflicted feelings about their tactics and strategies?
Sure. Well, I will be very frank. First off, in my personal life, I know no one, and I know a lot of people who watches Fox News, particularly people who are addicted to it. And so I didn't ever saw it. I started doing public speaking tours for as a Fox News celebrity in 2010. And that's when I finally got it. I really got it. I was in South Arkansas, University of South Arkansas, and gave a speech to 2,000 people, age, you know, seniors in college to 150 years old. And in talking with them before the show and then after it, I had never seen the range of people who you know, hated other Americans. I mean, viscerally hated. And every point they used to support their hatred came right out of the mouth of Sean Hannity or, you know, whomever. Now it would be Tucker Carlson, so on and so forth. I had never seen it before. And you know, as an equity research sort of analyst guy, I like to solve puzzles. And I could not understand it. I went back to friends who are in the psychology business, a friend who's in a cult deprogramming thing. And they said, Toby, you're an idiot. Do you remember Psych 101? You remember this whole idea of cognitive dissonance and cognitive confirmation bias? And I said, yeah, well, that was a few years ago, okay? I said, well, you know, and when they started explaining to me, you know, how so easy it is to do it. And then I looked at actually how we programmed the show, and I was like, you know, my head shut off there. I just still didn't know the depth of it. I thought this was basically, you know, a small cadre of people. I had no idea how many tens of millions of people.
Right. And so even as you were on Fox, you were really seeing all of this kind of through your own perspective and didn't have a clear idea of what it was doing to people out in the world or
right,
how
right.
many
and
people.
I was in my own bubble, right? If social media is such an important part of this story, because remember, Roger came up with this idea in 1974 with Richard Nixon. He pitched him the idea that we need a conservative television network because those GD liberals are, have taken over. They own everything. And if we don't have our own channel, blah, blah, blah. So that went nowhere because we had this thing, you know, called the Fairness Doctrine, the FCC, and the FCC had very strict rules on how you dealt with political stuff. Well, as Reagan was starting to fade in 87, Ailes and a bunch of other people from the right side came in and got him to essentially dismantle the Fairness Doctrine. And that opened the window. All of a sudden now you could start this. Then you had to have Rupert Murdoch put $1 billion up front into building an audience and getting carriage. So, I mean, there was a lot of money, a lot of time to get to it. But the magic moment for Fox was the election of Barack Obama. And now, you know, also remember that Roger Ailes never produced any television. His entire business, his entire life was creating attack ads for the, you know, right wing. And you know, he'd done thousands of attack ads. They'd done all the focus groups. He knew exactly what people, you know, they even had people hooked up. Like I used to do focus groups for a company I was involved in. And, you know, you put them up on basically a lie detector test, and you see what, you know, gets them angry, and you see what they respond to. So he knew all this innately almost. So when he got a chance to have an enemy, then we switched to the, you know, the Obama hating network. And again, that resonated with tens of millions of people more than just simply talking about the, you know, the political news, which at some point in time doesn't, you know, get you your heart beating.
Right.
It doesn't viscerally connect you, and it doesn't give you an enemy. And if you don't have an enemy and you can't feel superior to your enemy, you know, it's not addictive.
Right.
Remember, the feelings are all neurochemicals, right? I mean, it's the dopamine, it's the adrenaline, it's all. But particularly when we orchestrated these debates, remember, if you ever saw a quote unquote debate, there would be four people, three of them which would be conservative, and then this one poor liberal who was doing the show because, you know, they wanted to build his or her brand as a liberal who will stand up to Fox News. But in fact, I was there every week. They flew me up, especially. Most guys never, you know, flew up. They would do it from a satellite. Well, they had me because I was really good at being the hitman. The producer would set it up. So we got the point of view, you know, the POV, as they call it in the TV business, from the liberal. Now, the liberal was chosen, Greg, to be the worst, the least capable person to defend the point that whatever we were debating. There weren't, you know, the idea on CNN and even MSNBC is, you know, at least about getting someone who can at least support the conservative point. Our deal was a whole different thing. We brought in someone who looked like a liberal, East Coast liberal elite, sounded like an East Coast liberal elite, because now, you know, the difference between radio and TV is, baby, now I can see their face. And 80% of emotion is transmitted by your eyes, your face, your hand gestures. So we just set this up. We choreographed these debates so that somebody, you know, we would just quietly beat the, you know, stuffing at him like a pinata. And then the host would come to me because we'd already set up what I was going to do. And then I'd come in and I'd say, well, you know, Bob, and they'll always say, you can always tell this. All right, Toby, you have the last word. Well, as soon as you hear that, now you know that it's all been set up. And now I'm going to come in and I'm going to plunge the sword in. And remember, the audience is not going to get all those lovely neurochemicals if they see the three right-wingers lose. That's not how that works. I mean, this is just like the game shows in the late 50s. They discovered if the person kept winning, the ratings went up. So Roger, you know, grew up in that environment. He organized these fixed conferences and press conferences for Nixon during the 70s. So he knew exactly how to make this happen. And so if you were to take essentially the dark psychology of WWE wrestling, where it's all fixed, but they just didn't tell you, and then finally the FCC made him, you know, say it's fixed. My hope, one of my big points in the book is that we have to at least, you know, have a disclaimer on these shows the way we have on an infomercial for, you know, Tupperware, that this is entertainment. This is not news. News is telling you what happened. Entertainment is trying to get elicit a feeling from you. And that's why I started calling it tribal hate porn, because these same feelings, this arousal of hate is automatic. It's involuntary, but I got to set it up. So I've taken you on this emotional roller coaster, and then boom, the hitman knocks it off. And now you're like, wow, feels great to hate.
And your suggestion is, and we'll talk about it in a minute, is sure. That this amounts to addiction for some people who watch Fox News hour by hour by hour by hour, and who go back to it again and again for this same kind of hit.
Go ahead.
I just want to, first of all, reintroduce you. I'm speaking with Tobin Smith, for 14 years, a contributor to Fox News and a guest anchor, but now the author of a very hard-hitting book called Foxocracy, Inside the Network's Playbook of Tribal Warfare. Before we explore some of the specifics of this elaborate choreography that you just were describing, I want to give you a chance to talk a little further about Roger Ailes. And one of the most interesting things, I think, in your book, at least in terms of things I learned that I did not know before, was something about why Roger Ailes hates liberals as much as he does. And you suggest that because there's plenty of people walking around who are either conservative or liberal and don't necessarily have a real personal hatred for the other side. But you spell out some reasons why this is so personal, was so personal for Roger Ailes. And in particular, it seems to have had a lot to do with him feeling profoundly disrespected in some of the businesses in which he worked. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, here's the context for me. I do think that people who, you know, would consider themselves liberal or you know, a partisan liberal, et cetera, they don't realize that when you call somebody a homophobe or an Islamophobe or any of the phobes or all the, you know, the bad things that are ladled on a conservative person, if you're like Roger Ailes, he's from Warren, Ohio, a small town, South Central Ohio. Grew up, you know, you knew everybody, you went to church on Sunday, you had traditional values, yada, yada, yada. When he got into television after college, at very young, 25, he used to produce the Mike Douglas Show. He was the youngest producer in television. And even at that point, they treated him like, you know, he was producing junk TV, and they knew he was conservative, and they shunned him, right? So he went through that. Then he got in the business of doing advertising. First off, he helped Richard Nixon get elected, and then he became a guru for right-wing stuff. And he learned very on that when he would go to a television, you know, event or award ceremony, et cetera, they shunned him. They treated him like crap. He was a short, fat, bald guy who had hemophilia growing up. So, you know, he never got picked for the football team or basketball team, et cetera, et cetera. He wasn't dating the prom queen. So this all sort of built up. But most of it, when he moved to New York, I mean, you know, if you know New York, he and three guys could be the entire Republican Party. Everything he did, it was, you know, he was just a POS. Everything that he did was, well, he's a, you know, he's a two-bit hustler, blah, blah, blah. And when Rupert Murdoch finally, you know, stepped up to the table and spent the money so that Fox News would get carriage, then payback was revenge. And I use a story in the book that one day I asked him, so Roger, first off, I said, why do you hate liberals so much? And he looks at me dead in the eye and says, Toby, are you a liberal? No, Roger. I'm just curious. I mean, I've never met anybody who hated these people so much. And he said, because, you know, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, if I was, I'm rich. Well, I'm not near as rich as them. I went to college, good college. I didn't go to good college. You know, he just went through the whole litany of victimology, et cetera. But he finally said, and you know, Toby, if I was lying on Sixth Avenue here with my neck against a curb, those guys would come over and snap my neck with their Gucci loafers. And I looked at him, I said, okay, Roger, last time we'll talk about that. I mean, he was the quintessential small town person who moved out of small town. I call that the SAT rapture, right? You know, you get a good score in the SAT score, you get to go to college outside of your small town. You got outside your small town, you never go back. But he never left his small town. And I think he's representative of, obviously, you know, 100 million people or so in the United States that also feel like everything they believe in, all their culture that they have followed, is constantly told that they're horrible people. And when you call somebody a bad name or a horrible person, they want to fight back. I mean, that's Trumpism. That's so on and so forth. Well, Roger did it, but the thing was, he now had a cable news network, and he could get back 24/7.
Right.
And, you know, if you had that much of a grudge and much of a chip on your shoulder, oh, man. Mm. And so what he did is he infused that in his anchors. You know, Sean Hannity, you know, for the 96 or 7 points of IQ that he has, he is Roger taught him everything. He just soaked up Roger's hatred. He soaked up the methodology. And, you know, Sean Hannity gets 3.5 million people a night. Mm. But multiply that by 10. By the time, his segments get diced up and put in social media and so on and so forth. So it has huge impact. And we'll get into the addiction part in a second. But just think about it. If you watched 3 hours a day, 20 hours a week, thousands of hours a year of visual information with all the visual cues, the eye cues, the face cues, the horrible person sitting on the other side of the desk, all of that stuff, wouldn't you get a little strange? Wouldn't you start looking at everybody as, you know, an enemy versus not? We're all tribal. You know, we just sort of suppressed it for a number of years. But then we invented this new media, and that's one of the points in the book. We never had, you know, tribal hate media after World War I, essentially, when yellow journalism went away, and now we sort of changed back to this, like, just give me the facts stuff. Then we had World War II. We had two new technologies that happened, radio and we had talking pictures. Well, who were the number one rated radio people in Europe in the 1930s? Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler. And they learned how to use this new technology in a way to obviously, perpetrate their agendas. And then we had this in 49, when television started, Congress said, wait a minute, we just went through World War II and we learned what radio and television could do. So we're going to strictly limit. There will be no tribal hate media on television because, as Roger Ailes says, television is the most powerful force in the world. And that was all fine till 87. And when the Fairness Doctrine went away, that was the original sin that allowed us to monetize tribal hate, to sow and monetize tribal hate. Because remember, Fox News' business model is very simple. The more people that they can get to hate other Americans, the more profit they make. So their business model and financial incentive is to have as many Americans as possible hate as many other Americans as possible so that they can make $3 billion a year in revenue. And I don't think anybody, you know, really appreciated that until it was too late. And then once social media came in, then our impact, our estimates, and Frank Luntz and other people who do polling on this, is Fox News's tribal hate media, I call tribal hate porn, reaches 70 to 80 million Americans at least monthly, and that's from all the data from the Nielsen's, from the engagement data from DataWiz and other guys. 80 million. Did anyone ever imagine that with this new media that people really weren't prepared for? Because remember, the great secret of Fox News is we called it Fox News. We could use the word news, even though it was tribal hate porn. The average, the median age of a person, Greg, who watches Fox News is 68 years old, median. So that means half the people are older than 68. And frankly, they don't got a lot of stuff going on in their lives. We got 60% of America that lives in working poverty or under poverty, so they're not exactly thrilled about their life. And man, I can turn into this alternative world. I can see beautiful girls and hate-ridden guys, and I feel better about myself in a world where I'm not getting a lot of self-esteem points to begin with, and it's a recipe for disaster.
What you just said reminds me of an interesting quote in the book from someone you say is one of your favorite commentators, Peggy Noonan, where when she is talking about, in a sense, at least a wide swath of the kind of folks who will consume the programming of Fox News for hours on end, she talks at one point about the fierce teamism of the lonely. So teamism, T-E-A-M-I-S-M, yeah, of the lonely. And this is something that is kind of a recurrent theme in your book about, in a sense, the loneliness and the isolation that is a reality in the lives of many people who you believe to be addicted to this kind of programming. And you also make the case that isolation is maybe there to begin with to some extent, but maybe is even worsened as they continue consuming this kind of programming. Explain that connection to us a little more.
Sure. Well, I mean, think about it for a second. Again, Frank Luntz polling, 80 million Americans say that they are estranged, as in not talking to at least one close family member, parent, brother, you know, blah, 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 or close friend, right? 80 million. So how does that happen? And the way it happens is there's a continuum of partisanship, right? You know, if you self-identify as anything, you have a group dynamic that comes into your psychology. And that group dynamic is that you automatically seek to measure your tribe against the other tribe, because the difference between that, I feel so much superior, I feel so much smarter, brings you self-esteem. Well, that's addictive. I mean, that's addictive because of the neurochemicals, right? Now, addiction therapists, specialists use the term behavioral addiction. In other words, if you're doing certain things that are negative to your life, and one of those negative things would be that now your wife doesn't want to talk to you. Remember, 70% of the people who watch Fox News are male. Your wife and you don't talk anymore because you're so intense. Everything, every sentence, almost every sentence that comes out of your mouth is, look at the sky, it's blue. Honey, how beautiful it is today. And the essentially tribalized Fox News watcher says, yeah, where's that global warming? Where's Obama's Clean Air Act, right? So all of a sudden, it's just too much. And so you become estranged from a close family member. When you become estranged from people, you are lonely. You drive people away. University of San Francisco, in their public health research, says that the number one way people become lonely, is chronically lonely, is to drive people away. And the number one way you drive people away is when you become so politically intense. Every subject goes back to, how stupid, the liberals are, or how stupid the right wingers are, for that matter. And then what happens is there's a great movie called Brainwashing of My Dad, by the way, by Jan Sinko. And she taped her father descending into this psychosis. And what happens is that you do get hooked on the feeling you get from watching this. And when you do this, and you do it many, many times, then you start doing behavior that is negative to your life. And that's what's called, behavioral addiction. Using the pornography example, people who become addicted to pornography, which is about 5 million people in the United States, about 70 million people worldwide, Number one issue that they continue to watch it for, 11 hours a day, a week, by the way, is what is if you're a porn addict. And in Fox News, they're watching 25 hours a day, right? So, wow. But the first thing that happens is you lose your job. 45% of people addicted to pornography, sexual pornography, lose their job. 55% lose a relationship they're in. Oh, shocking, right? But they continue to do it. And that's what they call behavioral psychology, is the fact that if you continue to do stuff that's negative to your life, then your need for this stimulus you're getting, this involuntary arousal, is more important than your life. And that's the sign of addiction. And the other downside of this whole issue is that we all know now that, chronic loneliness is a very significant epidemic in the United States. It's by the way, it's in all Western societies. But once you become estranged from people that you lose connection with, us humans seek connection. All the psychologists that I talk with and social scientists, this is we innately seek connection. It's ultimately about our personal safety. But when you lose connection, many of the psychologists that I've talked with said, well, then you're going to seek to connect with something. And they use the idea that when we say what's the inverse of addiction, we say, well, that's sobriety. Most of these guys are now saying that the inverse of addiction is connection. And when you've lost connection with human beings, they call that your social capital, right? That needs to be replenished. When your social capital bank account gets low, you're going to connect with something. And for many of these people, they are viscerally, literally connecting with this message of hate because it makes them feel better about themselves, because they get the dopamine drug, that wonderful drug you get, I bike ride. So when I bike ride, 22 miles today, I come back, man, you get a little adrenaline shot, but the great feeling you get is the dopamine thing that makes you want to do it again. And when you're getting dopamine hits by hating people, then you're getting addicted to that hate. And frankly, for many of these people, that's the only dopamine hit they're getting. They're not talking to their wife. Their kids don't talk to them. They've lost friends. They're angry all the time. Their blood pressure's high. I mean, every comorbidity of premature death comes from this. And the University of San Francisco and BYU and other people who've researched just chronic loneliness say that your health risk is 45 to 60% higher for premature death. And again, I would say that, we know that in these many of these communities, particularly, white working class America, red state America, the 2,600 counties that voted Trump, the life expectancy is significantly lower. Now, I'm not saying that's because of Fox News, but it is certainly part of that process of becoming estranged, getting all these bad physical chemicals, because you're sitting in your, frickin' chair for 3-4 hours a day with your hair on fire. And the only pleasure you're getting out of this is when you learn another reason to hate another fellow American, and boom, you get all jacked up.
You say at one point that one of the scariest things to consider is what happens to the brain of an elderly viewer of Fox News whose brain has been marinated by viewing thousands of hours of this kind of programming. That word marination is really kind of scary to think about. But beyond that, yeah. You also talk about how Fox News could also be viewed, as far as you're concerned, as a gateway drug. That is, that it can lead to things that, in your mind, are still darker.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things we as a society, I believe, need to recognize is that we never had this video tribal hate media. We hadn't had it for, 70 years, right? We go back to the late 18th or 19th century, and oh yeah, we had hate media, every day. We didn't attack Spain because all the reasons is because we got that hate ginned up by the newspapers, right? But this thing is so much more ubiquitous. And marination just simply means that, again, your limbic system, your physiology, your DNA biology is set up to, when you feel a threat, fight or flight, it shoots you a whole bunch of chemicals. You have no control over that. And when those chemicals go into your system, they jack up blood pressure, they raise acuity. I mean, essentially, you're getting ready to fight or you're getting ready to run, right? And your body doesn't know, your brain doesn't know this is, you know, a game show, basically, on how do we hate more Democrats.com. It just, you know, reacts. Well, as you marinate your brain in this stuff, the particularly the neuropsychologists, it's just amazing. They'll look at somebody's brain through an MRI. It's called a functional MRI. It shows how your brain lights up. And when you go into this fight or flight thing, your brain just lights on fire because there's all this innate stuff that happens. And mostly it's at the brain stem. It's at the subconscious automatic part. You know, just think about if you were, for instance, let's say your favorite football team, let's say the Packers for crying out loud, and they're playing the hated, you know, Bears. And every 7 minutes, they're running down this field and then they're scoring. And then every other 7 minutes, the Bears, they force the Bears to fumble. And you're going, yeah. Matter of fact, if your audience just stands up on their feet, takes their fist and shakes and goes, yeah, you're going to feel chemicals. It's automatic. You can't stop it.
Right. And that would be if you would have to somehow fix a game to ensure that there would be that predictable emotional payoff again and again and again. And what you're suggesting is that many of these programs that are presented as though they are fair debates, even-handed and balanced, in fact are fixed, are choreographed that the typical Fox News viewer is going to be pleased. pleased with what ensues.
Well, essentially, think of it as a drug dealer. If the drug dealer doesn't bring the drug you want, then you fire the drug dealer because you're not getting what you wanted out of the thing. People don't know this consciously. I mean, that's the weird part about, you know, us being humans is we have the subconscious that drives a significant amount of our behavior. And number one, number two, you know, I took a lot of humanities and stuff, liberal arts in college. Well, that's about 6% of America that actually maybe took a psych one, a psych two, and, you know, maybe a behavioral psychology, other stuff, right? People just aren't aware. I call this tribal hate media literacy. I mean, what I love about doing this interview, and you've been spot on, is that there's a lot of people listen to NPR. What's the number? 80% have gone to college, a lot of it liberal arts. They understand this. But if you're from, you know, a part of Wisconsin where you did not go to college and you're a fine working class person, farming, whatever, you're not prepared for this because you don't understand the simple concepts that once you become tribalized, then this thing called cognitive dissonance fits in and your brain cognitively says, it literally pains me to hear information or evidence that does not support my political self-identity. So I'm going to turn that off. In the old days, you couldn't turn it off because there was only three, you know, television stations, right? Now, obviously, you can create your silo, digital silo from 7 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock at night and all other hours. And you will never hear anything. You'll never see anything that is cognitively dissonant to you, number one.
So,
number two, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so in other words, this is not just about hearing what you want to hear, but it's also about avoiding points of view that might cause you discomfort. Or if you hear those voices that are of a contrary perspective, it will only be in a very sort of carefully choreographed fashion in which that opposing viewpoint is then rather
squashed.
Ruthlessly squashed.
Well, so here's an example. Every time you do a debate, at least that I did on Fox, we had our, you know, our token pinata liberal. And we got their points of view. So I knew exactly what that person was going to make. Now, that person, again, as I've said, was selected purely not – if they're going to argue, you know, economics with me, you know, I've got a master's there. That's what I do for a living, et cetera. So they're going to get me the person who doesn't know really anything about economics, but they know the right left-wing talking points. So they'll come on the show, and I've already set up my script for the final coup de grace. And so the producers would set it up so the guy, you know, the right winger from here would start off, and then we'd go back to left winger and blah, blah, blah. Then I'd come in a little bit, and then they'd set up for the end. Now, I'm in New York in the producer's, you know, office, but at Fox News is basically the ghetto. The producer would say, Toby, I need a ball game here. I need you to work with me. All right. I don't care. You know, I mean, you're paying me $5,000 a week to come up to do an hour show. I'm in. they'd say, listen, here's what I need you to do. I need you to hit this point, this point, this point. Well, that would, where those points came from is Roger and John Moody, who were the news director, every day would put out their memo. And the memo was, here's what, you know, Roger's id is responding to. Here's Roger's response to that id responding to that issue. And here's, those are, that's what we're trying to sell today. Because what they're trying to sell today is, again, this idea that I'm going to first make you fearful. Now, there's now 10 MRI research projects, Greg, that have said that if you self-identify as a conservative, not just in America, but any democracy, your brain, your amygdala, the fear part of your brain, is about 20% larger than someone who self-identifies as a liberal. Because remember, every society, democracy has right-wing, left-wing, right? So these people are already more susceptible to fear. So now we start off with the fear. Gung! Fox News alert. Well, it's a talk show, but yet it's called a Fox News alert with red and wheels are spinning. And the whole psychology is to first get the fear. Now you're jacked up. You're fight or flight. Now you need some resolution to that. So now you respond to that. Now we go through the round and you hear that liberal and you're shaking. I can't tell how many people said, I've always wanted to throw a brick through that damn television, right? So now they're jacked up. They're standing, they're yelling and screaming. And I come in and I say, well, Sarah, those are great points. But, you know, it's interesting. You talk about inflation like it's something that doesn't happen. You know, somebody drove you here in a car and you're going to go out tonight at Le Cirque and have a great meal. Our audience doesn't really roll that way. Our audience knows what inflation is because they go to the market every day. When they go to the market, they see that eggs are a dollar more than they were last week. That's inflation to them. So, you know, why don't you quit insulting our audience and why don't you think of what it's like to live outside the bubble of New York? Boom. And you know, that whole rap could be anything. It doesn't matter what it is. But it is like the WWE. By the way, WWE, I have dear friends who are in the WWE business. They had this term called kayfabe. And kayfabe is the term they use between the audience and the wrestler that says, hey, you know that this is fixed. I know it's fixed. But our agreement is you're not going to talk about it, and I'm not going to talk about it. And the reason is because you came here to have a good time. You came here to boo the bad guy, and you came here to cheer the person, you know, they'll get called the baby face, right? So as long as we all understand, let's have fun. We had our own kayfabe at Fox News, and it was the term fair and balanced. Nothing was fair. Nothing was balanced. It was choreographed to follow this roller coaster emotion, so that the viewer is going to get the payoff. And oh, by the way, this has been done for hundreds of years. It's not like Fox invented it. It's just that we weren't able to do this with the fairness doctrine. And when we unleashed the fairness, we unleashed the Kraken, right? We allowed you go back, but put it in 4K television for people to DVR it. And then when social media hit. And so basically the monster came out of the box. And I think we have just ignorantly, stupidly, not recognized how prevalent, how dangerous this is. And then yet we're surprised. Woe is me. You know, the United States has never been more divided. Well, dude, we created a business to divide people for profit. What was going to happen?
Right. I wonder if you ever stopped to think about the damage that this has done to, in a sense, serious, thoughtful conservatives and or conservatism.
Oh, absolutely.
Only because one starts to think that they are indistinguishable one from the other, and that if you are a Republican or if you are a conservative, then you are somehow a party to the kind of programming that we're talking about here and the kind of attitudes that we're talking about. And, of course, they are not one and the same, but can start to feel almost indistinguishable if we're not careful.
Yeah.
Do you think about that? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, George Will is a friend of mine. We did a lot of television. George Will, you know, obviously we've left the 500-pound elephant out of here, Trump. But remember, Trump, all he did was take the exact Fox formula. And then instead of, you know, a dog whistle of racism, he brought racism in. All he did is take our entire formula. And if you take this interview and now you watch Donald Trump do his, you know, reality TV act every day. He learned it at Fox. We had him. I interviewed him many times for Fox Business News. He couldn't have been a more unctuous, couldn't have been a more, you know, every horrible thing that he is. But when the camera turned on, he did his little shtick, and he learned from Fox how to become essentially what I call as a TV hate evangelist. And then he, but we, you know, we always quote unquote dog whistled the other stuff, and people like George Will and Charlie Sykes from Wisconsin, for instance, who were conservatives, because conservatism, which I was born and raised in, is a philosophy. Greg, you understand it. It's not a political thing. Conservatism, starting from, you know, the Reformation after, was, I say was, a way of life. It was self-independence. It was you take responsibility for when you mess up. It was if you spend less than you take in, you'll build, seed corn for a rainy day, et cetera, et cetera. It was a philosophy. It was only really till Newt Gingrich came in and, you know, turned it into a sort of weaponized format that we got going. And not coincidentally, that's as Fox News got going when Gingrich came in. So, yeah, people in the conservative party if you're in the political side, because Trump has captured the marginal voter, right? He's captured the independent voter and the right-leaning Democrat in key battleground states. Because he owns those people, he owns their psyche, by the way. That's why the person, my friends in D.C. who are on the right wing, when I'm back in D.C., all I hear is freaking Trump. Oh, woe is me, woe is me. And then you put him on TV and they say, you know, Donald Trump makes a great point here. I mean, they've sold their soul purely for political reasons, right? Politics is power. Either you have power or you don't have power. They now understand what it's not have power. Many people who are true conservatives in the philosophy have gotten away. And Bill Kristol used to be on Fox News, Steve Hayes. There's a lot of guys and women that have said, Linda Chavez, that have said, no, I believe in the philosophy very strongly. It's helped balance out, you know, America. Remember, America sort of worked because we had people on the left, people on the right. You had to come to some consensus in the middle to get stuff done. Hmm. But when we created these hate silos, And we created the business of hating people outside of your silo, and people watched enough of it and then committed in social media. By the way, there's this term that social psychologists now use. It's called participatory propaganda, which is what their fancy way of saying is that when you get propaganda, which is simply information that's trying to get you to support an ideology, which is what Fox News is, and then you pass it on to your friend with a share, and then you type in, oh, yeah, and by the way, yada, 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 yada. Your participation in that process is gives you 10 times more impact because you're cognitively processing it. So what no one at Fox ever thought about, remember, by the way, Murdoch bought, my friend or whatever it was, MySpace, and then closed it down a year later because it didn't work, right? And it was only until Facebook came in and you had all your friends in there. And then you said, you know, can you believe this stupid, you know, libtard? And the guy said, yeah, I can't believe it. They're so stupid. All right. So that's all just, you know, if sexual pornography is sexual gratification, then telling people and sharing how stupid the other side is, that's just self-esteem gratification. That's just ego gratification. That venue was never available before. And that's when everything jumped the shark, jumped the rails, whatever you want to say. And we don't, as a society, recognize that we created essentially this cancer, and it metastasized. And now, what I've learned is through so many people I've now talked with and I've gotten letters from and so on and so forth, that probably 25 million people are not going to enjoy Christmas. I mean, I just did an article in the New York Times about the Thanksgiving that's coming out. That they can't go because we're killing the agree to disagree American. Hmm. And if you put yourself in more than, I don't know what the threshold is because everybody has their own threshold, but if you go over the top where you've marinated your brain in hate for too long, then once you flip over to this tribalized American, you got to go through Fox News rehab to get it back.
The book again is Foxocracy, Inside the Network's Playbook of Tribal Warfare. It's published by Diversion Books, and the author, Tobin Smith. Tobin Smith, I have really enjoyed this conversation, and your book was fascinating and illuminating. Thank you so much, and best wishes to you.
Best to you, and thanks so much for a great interview.
Tomorrow on the morning show, Nan Calvert pays her monthly visit to the program, and she has with her three guests from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources talking about how climate change is affecting us here in Wisconsin, and in particular, its effect on invasive species. And on Friday, we'll be previewing the upcoming holiday concert of the Kenosha Symphony, and also Sunday night's Sing-Along Messiah at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha, which is part of their Fine Arts at First